This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. What with all of the commotion around the presidential race and the ongoing battle for control of the U.S. Senate, you can't be blamed if you somehow missed what may turn out to be the most historic ballot measure passed in the 2020 general election. That would, of course, be Oregon's Measure 110, which dealt a death blow to the war on drugs in that state by decriminalizing the possession of all drugs, while dedicating tax revenues from the sale of cannabis products to drug addiction rehabilitation services, thus moving substance abuse problems firmly into the realm of public health and out of the criminal justice system. This week on The Compass, we get the thoughts on the Oregon measure of two local experts on how society addresses drug abuse issues. First up is Jefferson County Public Defender Richard Davies, who has served as a defense attorney in drug court cases for some 20 years.
The state of Oregon last month passed Measure 110, decriminalizing hard drug use and throwing drug possession and addiction problems into the realm of public health, which seems to a lot of people where it has always belonged. So maybe right at the top, you could like give me some comment about what you feel about that measure.
The policy seems right on. It is about a medical condition, and it belongs in that realm as opposed to the courts. And drug court, you know, was moving in the right direction, but I think Oregon is, where we need to end up, which is it being a public health issue as opposed to something that's run through the criminal justice system.
Maybe you could give me a little bit of history about the drug court and tell me a little bit about how it works.
So someone ends up in drug court, is their charge. Usually they would be pulled over by, you know, the local constabulary, likely because the officers run their license plate and it turns out that they haven't paid a traffic ticket. Their license is suspended. That allows the officer to get into business as a driver. And you're then arrested for this status offense, that is, you forgot to pay a traffic ticket or couldn't afford to, you're then arrested, patted down, and if they don't find the drugs on you, because, and from my point of view, that's the whole point of the interaction, is not to, you know, run somebody through the status offense case, but they're looking for drugs. So they find the drugs on your person. If they don't find the drugs on their person, they're then sweating you down to try and get into your car. Used to be the cops could get in your car, whatever the offense. And a Supreme Court justice named Scalia, who I don't agree with on most instances, took the position that you don't get into people's car just because you've been pulled over for this status offense.
Right.
A lot of rigmarole about how somebody ends up charged with the crime of possession of drugs, but it's a crime. And if it's, you know, a white powdery substance, it's a felony. Felonies can make a person's life miserable, whether it's employment or lack thereof, or housing or lack thereof going forward. So the system's, you know, got their claws into you, and you can either, you know, plead guilty, do, you know, next to no days in jail, grab your felonies for the future and or your lack of it, or you can get into drug court, which if you get through it and successfully complete it, the felony is dismissed. But drug court's, yeah, a hell of a process. It's, you know, 18 months as it's presently put together here. And you've got to go to treatment. Sometimes that's an outpatient three times a week with two AA meetings on top of that, or, you know, if you're really struggling, inpatient treatment followed by outpatient treatment. You know, so it's a lot of, you know, shuffling around from treatment to court every week and drug tests on a random basis every morning. You know, you call in, find out whether your name's on the list. And if it is, you have to go and submit to a observed urine analysis. Okay.
How many strikes before you're out? I mean, you know, if you test positive.
Well, so at least in our little drug court, there are a number of strikes before you're ever out. And the drug court teams, you know, rolls over backwards. So, you know, there are people that graduate from drug court with, half a dozen positive UAs or even more. And usually the trouble is at the beginning of a program, you know, person's really struggling to stay clean. It's a positive UA, you do a couple of days in jail. And the next time it's more than a couple of days in jail. And after that, it, you know, may even be a week or until a bed date for an inpatient program becomes available. So, yeah, it's not, you know, one dirty UA and you're out. You know, it's a struggle for people that are all strung out on all sorts of different drugs either. You know, there's a lot of people in drug court who have tried quitting on their own. They really, really want to quit, but next morning they're up getting high. And so there is some benefit to the coercive nature of drug court. I mean, that's something that, you know, I certainly wouldn't have admitted prior to getting involved in drug court almost 20 years ago. But having, you know, a consequence, one that's fairly immediate, hanging over your head, changes people's behavior, you know. And so if the night before you understand that you may well have to do a UA the very next morning, that is a urine analysis, that might be enough to dissuade you from getting high that evening, even if you're hanging with people that are getting high. And then the idea that you might do a day or two or more in jail fairly quickly, you know, that act on people's choices. And they're, I think, less willing the risk, where they, you know, they see the risk staring right at them, as opposed to, you know, well, it's destroying my family. Well, it's destroying the community. Well, you know, destroying me.
I'm kind of guessing that you might see some downside then to what Oregon has done, because basically it sounds like Oregon has more or less abandoned that coercive power.
Well, that's right. And I see that in our court here, you know, especially during COVID, when the system is, you know, trying to run people through the revolving door, if you will, and the prosecutor is willing to reduce the charge to something that isn't as serious as a felony, plead guilty, you don't go to jail, anything else of you except you're going to have this record you're going to be dragging around. And so when that's the choice, people are, you know, they want to take the easy way out. So, yeah, okay, I'll take a misdemeanor or even a felony if it means I don't have to go to jail. And then there isn't the treatment piece. And so I could see that as a downside in Oregon. It is, you know, properly, I think, thought of as a public health issue, as, you know, at least for the individual, a medical issue. But how to get folks involved in treatment if you're, you know, it's not just the carrot, you know, the way the system works here presently, there's kind of a stick,
right,
that is being wielded over your head also. So that might be the downside, because it really is sweet to watch people get off dope. You know, the time they're in drug court, most of the time they're tired of it, you know, and they really wish they could quit on their own accord. But for whatever reason, that is addiction, they can't. And, you know, so they need the assistance, you know, probably not of the court, but certainly a structured program like treatment is, or certainly can be. You know, and one develop different ways of being cleaner and soberer than they were going in is a real delight.
Do you have any idea of what the statistics are in Jefferson County? I mean, you know, like what percentage of the cases that you handle as a public defender have some drug component to them, would you say?
Probably 90%.
Really? So it's huge.
Yeah, it is the underlying difficulty that people are having. And, you know, it's 90%, I guess I'm also including, you know, people that are struggling with mental illness. So let's say it's, you know, 70% drugs and alcohol, and it's 20%, you know, an underlying mental illness. So it is a huge undercurrent for the whole criminal justice system. Well, and I think Oregon's got it right. It shouldn't be criminal to actually use, you know, whatever it is you want to use. It becomes criminal, in my view, when that leads to, you know, assaultive behavior or, you know, thieving to support your habit. You know, so one thing that my clients will do on occasion is, you know, they're high, they're looking to get higher. They're sticking their hands in, you know, my mailbox and yours, looking for whatever they can to, you know, forge checks or whatever. That's when it's become a crime. And that's when the criminal justice system needs to address the matter. But if you're just driving down the road with, you know, a packet of white powdery substance in your pocket, that's, in my view, not something that should be addressed by the criminal justice system. It's something that, you know, is better addressed with a, you know, a personal physician and or as a systems, as, you know, a public health issue, not criminal justice.
The other expert I mentioned is Jefferson County Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke, who has long been a vocal advocate of drug decriminalization. Here's our interview on the subject. I suppose you're probably aware that Oregon recently decriminalized drug use and put it into the category of public health. I wonder if you have any comments about that change in Oregon. I'm sure you're probably aware of it.
This has been an issue of mine for a long time. I once publicly debated the Clallam County Sheriff. It was actually not Bill Benedict, but one of his predecessors on the drug wars. The sheriff was a friend of mine, but we took the opposing views. And I think the criminalization of drug addiction has been the most catastrophic public policy blunder of the last century. It's just utterly failed, however well-intentioned it is. And I think for some, it was well-intentioned. People thought if they criminalized drugs, and that would prevent people from taking them, and we'd all be better off. But it's been a colossal failure. And it's filled our prisons, and it's caused us to ignore the real roots of addiction. So I think places like Oregon are starting to acknowledge that the science of this is that addiction is a disease. You know, we should no more criminalize addiction than we should criminalize diabetes or cancer or high blood pressure, because all of those things have to do with behaviors too. But we don't punish people for having a disease. We treat their disease. I support what Oregon's doing. What they've really done is decriminalize possession. It's right. Still not legal to sell things. I think it's interesting that they've kind of given the green light to therapeutic use of psychedelics too, because that's a promising area of therapy that we've ignored because of the stigma, this kind of drug stigma on really plants and fungi that have these psychedelic properties. But there's really solid scientific research that they can be used therapeutically.
How large or small a problem is drug addiction in Jefferson County?
We don't have really good data about it. We have emergency room data. We know opiate overdoses. We know some things that the system responds to. We know how many people roughly are in treatment for what's called opiate use disorder, but it's the data really is the tip of the iceberg. Some things we know it is a serious problem on the Olympic Peninsula. it's somewhat worse in Clallam County than Jefferson, but it's neither of us are spared. And ominously, it's getting worse during the pandemic.
Really?
All these stressors and this impaired access to health care, it's making it more likely for people to relapse into addiction. It's also making it harder for them to get treatment. And it's really tragic with opiates because we have really excellent treatments for opiate addiction now. Unfortunately, that's not so with things like methamphetamine. We do not have good treatments for methamphetamine. And abstinence is still really the only effective way to prevent the health consequences of meth use. But with opiates, where your body just becomes rewired, reprogrammed, that you need the drug. The drug replaces a drug that you naturally produce but can't produce any longer. There's good substitutes for that. So there's drugs that will satisfy the craving without making you high. And
but there's no way to like sort of re-kick in your natural, is it dopamine?
It's the endorphins are endorphins. What gets suppressed. But the endorphins trigger dopamine release. So dopamine's
right.
Connected.
I see. But so there's no way to sort of reverse that?
Not yet. It happens naturally in about 10% of people with these addictive disorders a year. So of people who just, stop, about 10% are successful in staying off the drugs in a given year, and their system gets back to normal. But the relapse rate of 90% is just extraordinary. And you can drop that. The replacement drugs are about 80% effective in treating opiate addiction if used correctly. Like in places, I've been involved in this fight in Squim. We've been trying to, the Jamestown Sklallam tribe's been trying to start up this kind of state-of-the-art medication-assisted treatment facility that has all these wraparound mental health and medical care and dental care services. And it's been delayed about a year by this really wrong-headed campaign that people are afraid to have people with addictive disorders, inside the city limits of Squim, when in fact they're already there. I mean, the point I've made again and again to the group is you are confusing the solution with the problem. The problem is untreated addiction and the burglary and the various other sort of negative consequences of it. Under treatment, people are model citizens and they return to, productive lives. So it looks like that's fine. That will be built. The Jamestown Sklallam tribe has been absolutely determined to make that happen. And importantly, their target, they are doing it to serve the residents of Clallam in Jefferson County. So that's their target group. And they're actually restricting people that can use it have to live in one of those two counties.
Oh, they have to prove residence. Because that has been one of the major criticisms. This is going to draw in like drug addicts from all over the state or whatever. I mean, it's.
Yeah. Which was crazy because it's, people are not going to bus up here from King County. They have these treatment programs in King County already. We're the ones that are deficient in them.
So do you have a handle on what the statistics are for like, say opiate related deaths or,
There is some published data on that. The University of Washington has a program that compiles that. I do not know it currently off the top of my head. I know we crested. It was a really severe problem in Clallam County in the last 10 years where. It was actually for a while, Clallam County had the highest per capita death rate in the state of Washington.
Is that right?
Yeah. And that's improved somewhat. We backed off from that peak, but we're By no means have we gotten to where we need to be. And it's harder to measure in Jefferson County because we have Jefferson County residents who get services in Clallam County and Kitsap County. So we have not had as good a treatment program availability in Jefferson County as has been the case in neighboring counties, but that's been improving. Jefferson Healthcare now has a number of certified providers who can give this Suboxone, this opiate replacement drug. And I think the system's getting better and better at treating people, but still there's a lot of opiate addiction out there. Heroin is incredibly cheap and available. And we're still seeing a lot of meth use as well. Methamphetamine is very cheap.
I understand. In terms of like the scale of addictiveness, isn't it like more addictive than heroin?
Well, it's hard to compare them because they're sort of different mechanisms, but they have overlap. They both kind of, as we've learned, they kind of commandeer your reward centers. You know, like it or not, we are these mammals that where our brains reward us for things that promote our survival. You know, eating and exercise and reproduction and other things that, you know, we feel good. And that feel good is part of it is this chemical release in our brains. And that's what the drugs hijack. But they also damage the system so that when the drug wears off, you don't return to your starting point. You return to kind of you feel worse than you did when you started. And so you get on this roller coaster that it's hard to get off of.
Right.
You know, I really believe that, you know, there's this saying that it should go from the attorney general to the surgeon general. And I agree with that. This is fundamentally should not. The crime that's generated by addiction, you know, definitely is a criminal justice problem. But addiction itself should not be criminalized. It should be treated as the health problem it is, because it's actually one of the more treatable problems. You know, there is a lot of things in medicine that we do not have good treatments for, but this is not one. We have an excellent treatment that we're just not using enough. And so a lot of us are trying to change that. I mean, I was a Suboxone provider for the Jamestown Clinic for 3 years and really got to see things up close. And it just affects you to just watch people turn their lives around. It's a very dramatic and gratifying experience. Incarcerating people does not treat their addiction. We know that very well. People think that, well, if you lock them up for months to years, then their addiction will go away. And it doesn't. You know, the very high relapse rate when people are released from jail or prison. It's why we have programs in both counties, Clallam and Jefferson. We start people on Suboxone before they leave jail. So they don't relapse when they're on the outside, because not only are they at risk of relapsing, but the risk of dying from an overdose is like increased by 400%.
Oh, because they can no longer tolerate what they were doing before they went to jail, right?
Exactly. And so we're not only trying to treat their addiction, we're trying to, you know, save their lives. And so that's, you know, I think it's really hard for the criminal justice system to get away from this, you know, seeing addiction as, you know, what they call a characterologic disorder. You know, you're a bad person, you're making bad decisions. And when in fact, what in most cases, you're a person who has lost control of your ability to make good decisions. You know, the drug is making the decisions for you. And that's what I would tell people when I was treating them is your brain's been hijacked by a drug. And, you know, kind of like a virus hijacking a computer. And we have to, in order for you to take back control of your life, we have to take back control of your brain from the drug.
Yeah. Or a virus hijacking your lungs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's remarkably similar. And so that's what we do, basically, is we sort of substitute a benign replacement drug for the harmful drug. And then people, you know, they don't have to steal to get the drug because, you know, we're giving them a substitute for it.
Giving or prescribing?
Well, prescribing.
Right.
Although there's some like a methadone clinic that they would actually give you the dose, but no, we prescribe. We let the pharmacies are the ones that get to handle the drugs and the billing and all of that.
Right. That's what I was getting at. Is it free? I mean, are there free programs? Because I mean, that's the other thing, of course, is, you know, naturally, it's the trying to get the money for the drugs that causes the crime that's associated with it. Generally,
yes, it is it's covered by virtually everyone with a opiate use disorder is eligible for some kind of insurance coverage, and so we would never withhold this based on inability to pay, and in Washington State the Medicaid system covers most of it. But you know, at the point you need treatment, you've generally lost your job and you're
right.
Destitute or close to destitute, although not always. You know, it would surprise people how many employed, seemingly normal people are in fact addicted to opiates and really struggling with it. But just having an adequate number of available treatment slots, that's been the challenge. But once we get people in treatment, we can find ways to pay for the medication.
With public defender Richard Davies and Jefferson County Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans. Thank you.